Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We've recently tested several models of deep fat turkey fryers and find that this method of cooking can be very hazardous.
Looks like our partially frozen turkey is ready. Our temperature's at 350 degrees, so put the turkey in.
Now, there are days in this business of talk radio where you say, well, it's a slow news day or a fast news day. And then there are days like this where it's a day of insanity, and we don't know whether this is a spoof, or they're insane, or they're drugged out of their minds, or we have no idea why the Department of Homeland Security would issue a warning over turkey fryers. You heard me. The dangers of deep frying a turkey were elucidated by the Department of Homeland Security under Chaz Napolitano, saying that you must make sure the turkey is completely thawed before you cook it, or it may explode in some kind of oven. Now, this is the same DHS which refused to prosecute or investigate the Muslim terrorist that the NYPD busted the other day. This is the same DHS that refuses to crack down on the radical gangs called Occupy, which have closed down one of the busiest ports in America, threatened to close down the Brooklyn Bridge, threatened to close down Wall Street. Instead, this trillion-dollar agency talks about watching out for deep-frying a turkey. Topic number two on the Savage Nation, John Corzine, his company MF Global, is missing $1.2 billion of investor money. Where do you think the money went? How in the world can you live in a country, follow the rules, stop at a red light, pay your taxes, when here is a man who was a former governor of New Jersey, former head of Goldman Sachs, now running an organization, goes bankrupt, and now they can't find $1.2 billion? Now, do you actually have faith in a government that lets this happen? Well, you should, and I'll tell you why. Because the organization that oversees groups such as Corzine's company are in good hands. They're all in the hands of people who worked for Corzine at Goldman Sachs. So you can bet the truth will come out. It gets even better. Obama has pardoned several drug dealers, mainly dope dealers, gave them pardons. Nothing unusual about that, is there? Meanwhile, a Border Patrol agent has been jailed for 2 years because he lifted up the hands of a Mexican drug smuggler while arresting him. This is the country you're living in where everything is upside down. It's not Alice in Wonderland. It's Obama in the White House. A terror turkey is the biggest threat to our safety in the United States of America. Well, okay, I rest my case. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. I have no questions for you. None whatsoever. So let's listen to the Devil or Angel music as I regroup and open the show once again.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find.
So the Department of Homeland Security is saying you must not cook a turkey unless it's completely thawed in a certain kind of oven because it's liable to explode. They had nothing to say about the occupiers who closed down the port of Oakland, threatened to close down Wall Street. Nothing to say about the arrest of the Muslim terrorist in New York City. And yet they're talking about exploding turkeys. Can I ask you a question? Do you feel you're living in the United States of America or in some time warp, some novel, some bad science fiction novel? Does it feel like a bad science fiction novel with everybody seeming to gang up against the American people on the federal level? How is it that the NYPD took the threat of this guy in New York seriously while the FBI and DHS did not? How is it that the federal government would arrest a Border Patrol agent for doing his job arresting a dope smuggler while freeing dope dealers? How is it possible? Do you feel that you're living in a country that's been occupied by a, I don't know, what shall I say? I don't know how to characterize the Obama White House. A Marxist group of criminals? Would that be too harsh? Do you feel that you're living in a country that's been occupied by a group that does not represent the American people? We'll make it even milder. Do you feel this country is occupied by a government media complex that is out to kill the average American person, imprison you, threaten you, endanger your children? Most of you do. Now, what's even more disturbing is that the fake Republican Party, in approximately 1 hour, will hold yet another debate. I don't know if it's the 90th, the 100th, the 15th, the 20th. And this time, again, using that slime ball, Newt, whatever, what's his name? Who's the jerk from CNN? Ashamed to his people, ashamed to Israel. What's his name? Wolf Blitzer. Now, why would the Republicans subject themselves to Wolf Blitzer? What Republican who is capable of leading the ASPCA would subject themselves over and over again to a myopic left-wing fanatic like Wolf Blitzer several times in a row? Answer, those who are unqualified at any speed. Topic number three, your topic, phone number 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I have other topics, but there are too many already in the mix. Where is John Corzine now that we don't need him? Where did the $1.2 billion go now that we need it? Answer, we'll never find out. Why is DHS giving a terror alert about cooking a turkey? Why is the Department of Homeland Security involved in cooking a turkey? Why are the Republicans debating in front of the far-left, uber-left schlemiel, Wolf Blitzer, once again? Albany, New York, Tom, you're the first up. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, it's a pleasure and honor. I'm calling because it might be, have something to do with the fact that Deval Patrick, our governor over here, managed to have his kitchen fully engulfed in flames because he put a frozen turkey into one of those fryers in his kitchen. And,
wait, you mean your governor of Massachusetts is a man who actually had an exploding turkey?
That's correct.
So you think he called Chaz, I mean Janet, you think he called Janet directly and said make this a high priority?
You know, who knows? You never know. I mean, the White House and
how can he run the state of Massachusetts if he doesn't know how to cook a turkey? How is that possible?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of turkeys here.
Okay, I get it. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, Lawrence, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, please. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, I believe that, you know, these Occupy people are more on our side, you know, the things that you speak about, because...
Yeah, but I don't defecate in the street to get my point across that the government's filled with crooks.
Well, the thing is...
I don't think that I need to defecate and urinate in the street and bang a tom-tom and smoke a joint and lay in a tent with a homeless person to get my message across.
I called to speak. Will you please allow me?
You are speaking. You made an idiotic point that I should be in a tent with a drum banger.
Well, then the thing is that they got Bank of America to back off on the $5 charge that they were going to start charging millions of people.
Oh, that's a big miracle. That's a real big miracle. And how many people's lives did they upset to do it?
Followed suit.
How much money did it cost the city of San Francisco to control those animals? Probably more than B of A would have made on the surcharge. Did you add up the cost of the overtime for the police that these animals caused?
Well, they aren't animals.
Take a walk. Why don't you go in a tent, smoke a joint, and lay down with a homeless person? Leave me out of it. Okay. It's Thanksgiving. People are not even listening. Look what I'm getting. A guy with a deep voice is a front for the Students for Communist Society, the SCS. They're back, by the way. The terrorist group SDS, which was a terrorist group in the 60s, Bill Ayers, SDS, pipe bombs, police, blah, blah, blah. They're back now, wrapped up with the Occupy crowd, and DHS is talking about exploding turkeys in a deep fryer. Texas, Philip, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, Michael? I was just calling to say about our Republican Party subjecting themselves to the liberal... questionnaires. Okay,
all right, thanks for the call. All right, let's start again. Call screener, hello. I know it's near Thanksgiving, but here are the rules. No cell phones. Tell him to never ask Mike how he's doing, how he's feeling, or can you hear me? If anyone asks me how I'm feeling, I hang up on them. If anyone says, can you hear me, I hang up on them. If anyone's on a cracking cell phone on the IRT, I hang up on them. So I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll resume on the Savage Nation talking about Chaz Napolitano's incredible, insane missive about a terror turkey. It's unbelievable. I can't be living in this country. This can't be the United States of America. We can't have a person like this in the Department of Homeland Security. It's totally impossible. Or am I wrong? I'll be right back. Savage. Obama has destroyed the world. He's wrecked the Middle East. He's wrecked the United States. He's wrecking Europe. And you're telling me that the Republicans can't marshal a single voice to elucidate a single message that tells the world that the reason the world is in turmoil is because of an incompetent community organizer, left-wing fanatic Marxist, and his band of lunatics ruining the world? No, impossible to believe. Not one of the stooges on the stage tonight will say that. Instead, they're going to let that shame of the Israeli people, Wolf Blitzer, run them in circles. That shame of the Israeli people pretending to be an American broadcaster, Wolf Blitzer, they're going to let this shill twist them around his little finger with that little owl face of his. I'm so angry that I don't have an opposition party to rely upon. At least in Europe, the people know what a communist is. In Europe, they understand it. They're sophisticated. So if someone runs on a campaign of the Socialist Party of Germany, they know what a socialist is. They have a choice. The audacity of Obama is not that he ran for anything, is that he ran and pretended not to be a Marxist. That's the audacity of hope, is that he can only get away with it because H.L. Mencken was right. Nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. There's no question about that. Is the American public more stupid today than it was 10 years ago or less stupid? Every time I open up the New York Post, there's a picture of a woman with a fat butt and something about her marriage to some idiot I never heard of. It's every day now Murdoch is doing this. I hope to see something about national security. So every day it's a picture of some woman with a long last name that ends in an N, with a fat behind and too much makeup. And it's every day the same thing, and I can't believe this is the New York Post. Is everybody crazy? Am I the last man who's sane in the United States of America? How could the Department of Homeland Security not say a word about the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Oakland Naval Bay, Occupy the Oakland Commercial Port? Not one word about the Muslim terrorist arrested in New York the other day, but put out a missive about how not to cook a turkey? How can you not understand the danger you're in? How can you not understand this? I guess you can't understand it. I guess you want to hear about women with fat behinds who wears too much lipstick and names end with an N. Patrick in Syracuse, New York, what's up? What's on your mind?
Reading the Bible, sir.
That's it? I should read the Bible? Just sit and read the Bible for the rest of the
day?
Read the Bible for the rest of the day?
No. It's so pertinent when you bring in scriptures when it aligns up with America's history and America's future.
I know, but you see, I don't even have the Bible in this studio. I have about five studios in a small radius, and I move around from each to the other so that no one knows where I'm going to be when I'm going to be there. And in this studio, I do not have a Bible. In this studio, I have a copy of The New Yorker there's an older studio with the article, the profile of Michael Savage. In this studio, I have Abuse of Power, a thriller by Michael Savage. In this studio, I have I'm giving you a complete breakdown of the books I have at hand. In this studio, I have The Concise Etymological Dictionary of the English Language by Skeet, not to be confused with Skeet Shooter. But you're not. In this studio, I have the Rogette's Thesaurus. Do we like the French now or hate them? I have the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. I think I could just read the dictionary and have more impact than I could if I were to interview Romney. I'd be better off reading the dictionary than interviewing Romney. Do you realize if I just read the dictionary, you'd have more information than from Romney? Romney is like the non-candidate's candidate. What does Romney stand for? Nothing. Why are they pushing Gingrich? Because he'll lose against Obama. Why is Gingrich surging in the fake poll? So to make certain that the man named Cain is never heard from again, he's the greatest threat to the establishment right now, and that's why they ran him off the rails. Of course he didn't know certain things. So he didn't know certain things. So what? You're telling me Obama had perfect knowledge? They never asked him a trick question. No one ever asked Obama a trick question. They're afraid of being called racist. But apparently you can call a black man who's a conservative any name you want, and you won't be called racist. You'll be invited on Bill Maher's show, you know, the place where all the Ku Klux Klansmen meet without the hoods. Who's what callers I have? I don't think I can take it. I really don't think there's not many callers out there. It's like a blank. Oh, I mean, the lights are lit on the 24 lights are all lit up. But if I ever told you what the people are calling about, you wouldn't believe it. And there's a second thing you have to hear about talk radio that you may not know. Since we're approaching Thanksgiving, I will let you behind the curtain for a moment. One of the early rules of talk radio is this. Callers do not represent the listeners. You don't know this. By and large, people who call talk radio shows really don't represent who's listening to the show. How could that be? Let's say you have millions of listeners a week. And on an average day, you get 3-4 callers an hour up on the air. So that's 3, 6, 9, 12, 10 people. They're not really representative of your listener base. You don't know who's listening. It could be anybody listening to the show. So you can't let the callers who try to lead you a certain way, you know what I'm saying, dictate the course of your show. Having said that, now what am I going to do for the rest of the show? Egyptian military rules move up power transfer date to July. That means the radical Islamists are going to win. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. George Soros, Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and Hillary Clinton apparently wanted the Muslim Brotherhood to rule Egypt, and they have won. Tell me why they would want the Muslim Brotherhood to appear in every country in the Arab winter. You know I call it the Arab winter from day one, because it's not an Arab spring, it's an Arab winter. Soon the good people of Egypt will find out that they never had it so good as they did under Mubarak. Very soon all of the Egyptian people will see what they had under Mubarak, and they will have no one to blame other than George Soros, Hillary Clinton, Jimmy Carter, and Zbigniew Brzezinski and the Big O. The big, big O in the sky.
Tweedly, 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 dee. I'm as happy as can be.
No, this is not Michelle Obama, just back from Bali. This is the theme song of the Obama administration, but it is being sung by, it's not Michelle Obama singing it, is it? It's Laverne Baker. That's right, it's Laverne Baker.
How you gonna keep that honey you got?
Yeah, goodbye Reggie.
Hunkies, hunkies, pieces, bite. I'm gonna see my honey tonight. Tweet, 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 tweet.
This is Janet Reno's theme song that we resuscitated from the Clinton years. In ashes, not 89 people killed by that one. We should count our lucky stars. In other words, you know, when you think about it, if Janet Napolitano is the, let's say, political descendant of Janet Reno, and Janet Reno left a legacy of 90 churchgoers burnt to the ground, we should actually be happy that this one's worried about an exploding turkey. And actually, we're ahead of the curve on it when you think about it. You think about that one. That's pretty good. In other words, we've got to go along with our lives and pray to God the federal government doesn't do too much damage. Now, I guess that's the way to look at it. Right? There's no other way to look at it, right? I mean, there's no other way to look at this. That the NYPD must be saying the same thing. They had to go and find the Muslim, the convert who was going to blow up the pipe bomb. And the FBI said he didn't pose a threat, even though they found the pipe, the shrapnel, the match heads, the igniter, the clock, communications with Yemen, a desire to go to Pakistan. That did not add up to a threat to the FBI. What does add up to a threat to the FBI? Returning veterans, those who oppose abortion, members of the Tea Party, conservative talk radio hosts, and anybody who actually waves a flag in front of their house. Those would be flagged. Hey, look, it's the end of days here with this government. I've never seen anything quite like it. If they can get away with what they've gotten away with, what's next? Anything they want. I asked somebody I respect, I said, how could Obama get away with this, and why doesn't he say anything? The answer is because he doesn't care. He knows he's above the law. He knows he's untouchable. And this seems to apply to John Corzine. This seems to apply to everybody at a certain level. They are the new untouchables. The problem is we don't have an Elliot Ness. Where is the Elliot Ness of today? Let's start with that question. Remember the series in the 50s, The Untouchables? It was about the gangs who were killing, robbing, dealing with booze with impunity in the streets of Chicago, right? Frank Nitti, the whole deal. Then there was one lone FBI agent, as played by Elliot Ness, as played by whoever, what his name was, I forget the actor. And we would have believed that there was always one guy out there who could save us from a gang that got too strong. But where is the Elliot Ness of today when you have people in the federal government who are clearly, let us say, conducting themselves in a manner that would make the criminals of the past look like petty thieves? How do you run a financial company, declare bankruptcy, and then have accountants find $1.2 billion missing and not be immediately arrested? Now, I'm asking a simple question. You know and I know that if a poor black kid stole a loaf of, let's say stole an iPad, make it a poor white kid if you find that too stereotypical. Okay, a poor Hispanic immigrant steals an iPad. He goes to jail he doesn't go to jail at all. He gets a reward from the Department of Homeland Security, gets invited to the White House. And the officer who arrests him goes to jail. Sorry, wrong analogy. A poor white boy steals an iPad for his blind and crippled mother. He goes to jail for 3 to 5. But if $1.2 billion is missing from a financial company, you become the Treasury Secretary. At least you get online because that's really not the largest sum that's been missing. I don't even think that would qualify him yet to run the Treasury. You got to get up to the level of the last Treasury Secretary to go there. Well, anyway, you get my position. I'm more cynical than I was at age 18, which is very dangerous. You know something? I am. I'm more cynical. This is not good. It is not very good for me to be this cynical. It's not healthy for me. I woke up today. What was I going to tell you? Something interesting. I thought you'd enjoy it because I know I can't do politics anymore. You're not interested in any of this. Are you really interested in the fact that Leon Panetta is flying home to Monterey, California every weekend on an Air Force Gulfstream 5 and reimbursing you, the taxpayer, at the rate of $1,200 per flight? Hey, I wish I could fly in a G5 across the country for $1,200. He pays coach, not even first class. You talk about the agates. I mean, the audacity. The audacity. In other words, one thing is I'm paying first class to get the... No, he's paying coach. It shows you how cheap these people are. And Democrats are on top of it all being crooks. They're cheap crooks. They have no class. In other words, they are abusing a taxpayer by flying on an Air Force jet to their home when they shouldn't be allowed to, right? Then they're reimbursing at the rate of a coach seat, a discounted coach seat. And now we have Pelosi. I'm building up to Pelosi. She actually came out with a statement saying those darn Catholics have this thing with the conscience, but I'm a great Catholic. In other words, on issues of conscience, she knows more than the Pope. I give up. I have never seen such audacity. Audacity of deceit. I've never seen anything like this in my life. So here we are. Here we are. Here we are. And what am I doing? I'm doing a radio show. I'm writing a new novel. Jack Hatfield's already got his next adventure. Trickle Down Tyranny will be out from Harper in March, I believe. The book is more or less finished. Except you can never finish a book called Trickle Down Tyranny with Obama in the White House. That's like an ongoing work in progress. Every time you think the book is finished and you've finally put in the last piece of tyrannical legislation that Obama or act that he just pulled off or one of his henchmen, the next day there's three more. So now when I drive around and I see little Priuses or the boxcars with a Obama sticker on it, I don't know what to do. I really control myself. Or I see 2012 with the rainbow. I have all sorts of emerging emotions on those. But then I say, slow down. You live in America. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. You have a talk show where you express yourself. She's allowed to be a dumb moron and drive around with that. And then I just go on with my day. I have no bumper stickers. I have no bumper stickers on my car. None whatsoever. I had a story to tell you. I can't remember it. I woke up. It wasn't about the turkey. It was a death. A death. It was a death thing. I told you. Remember last night when I got off the show, I said the angel of death, if it didn't visit me. Do you remember this? Do you remember? Well, I'm alive, so don't. That's not that dramatic. I don't want to be a total drama queen, thank God. A friend's mother, she had a flight to Florida. She said, okay, big deal. People are dying all the time. All right, big deal. Last week when I had it, I took my friend Jack out. His mother died that night. He said after you talked about it on the show Friday. So I don't know what it is. I talked about Henry, remember yesterday? And he saw the angel of death got up and he said, Harry, there's the angel of death. He's come for me. And then his son said, Dad, he's not here. There's no one in the room. And he said, no, there he is. And the father got up and collapsed and died. Remember that story? It was chilling, actually. It was frightening. So then I said, what are you taunt? I said, you know, it's one thing to taunt Chaz. I mean, you gotta watch your step here. These are mean people. These are mean. The most powerful people on earth run this government. And they're as mean as they come. They'll fool me for 1 minute. I mean, they frighten me to my core. They are the most dangerous people the world has ever seen. The only thing that constrains them, I don't really know what constrains them. It's not the Republican Party. If they could take a Border Patrol agent who does his job arresting a dope dealer, and they arrest him for lifting up the kid's arms and put the Border Patrol agent in jail and then give the drug smuggler from Mexico immunity for testifying against the Border Patrol agent, take a guess what they could do to you. Answer what they are doing to you. Printing money. Because Bernanke should be arrested, by the way, for cooking the books. If you had an accountant in your company, it's a public company, and they caught you cooking the books, you and the accountant go to jail. But if you call Ben Bernanke and you pretend to be an orthodox, a religious person, and you walk around like you're holier than the snow itself, you can make up anything you want about the economy. You can even bail out Europe and no one could say anything to you. Why? Why not? If you have a Department of Homeland Security that refuses to get involved in the Occupy terrorist movement in America, and refuses to get involved in the Muslim terrorists, the sleeper cells in America, if you have an FBI that won't get involved in these things, but you have them getting involved in an exploding turkey, and they put out a warning not to cook a turkey a certain way, well then, what can I tell you? It's Alice in Wonderland? What is it? Is it Jonathan Swift? Is it Alice in Wonderland, or is it something worse? Is this something we should laugh at? Fear? Cry? Do something about? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You have the most incompetent chief of in history of the Department of Homeland Security ever. Never qualified ever to run this. Ever. She's done one bad thing after another, not stopped one terrorist attack after another, and they can't get her out of the office. 37 congressmen signed a statement saying that the Border Patrol agent should be released immediately, and nothing happens. Instead, Obama releases drug dealers, gives them a pass today, marijuana deal. It's unbelievable to me. So what do you think is going to happen now? What do you think is going to happen now with the turkeys tonight being basted by Wolf Blitzer? Tell me that. With the turkeys again, the turkeys lining up to be basted by the shame of the Israeli people, Wolf Blitzer. I say that only because I need you to have an understanding. That you would think someone who came from Israel would have a better sense of survival than Wolf Blitzer. But then again, I've given up thinking that anybody has a sense of survival except the people on the front lines in police work and in the military. Everybody else seems to be walking around in a fog. What else do you want to say? I got some callers. Thankfully, a few people woke up. Here we got a turkey recipe they're calling about. I sang my heart out about the sad state of affairs. I gave you the entire ammo, all the ammo shot out of the gun. And now you're calling about a turkey recipe and read the Bible. I better open a window in here and take deep breaths. I feel I'm going to have an attack in a minute. In addition to that, the woman's mother, and then she had a fly. She's in the air now. I know she's not listening. That's why I can tell you about it. So I'm going to Florida. Well, the mother was lingering, but so it'll be very nice. Then we had to get the dogs because she watches the dogs and it was a mess, 8:30 in the morning, ring, ring. I mean, don't worry. Did I wake you? No, I always get up 15 hours before my radio show, you know, the Lenny Bruce line. But I was in a fog. I got up at 6, 5:30, because I always get up. Men get up that early. The athletic ones get up, and they do 56 push-ups. They eat some kind of hippie cereal. They run around the block. They save orphans. Me, I go back to sleep. I pull the curtains and make sure I get another 3 hours of sleep because I can't work. Starting later in the day. It's impossible if I'm up that early agitating with the internet. So the dog does his thing in the yard. I do my thing. Da, 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 and we get back into bed. All of a sudden, I finally fell back asleep. It's very hard to go back to sleep. It's an art unto itself. You have to have tremendous self-control. You have to have some presence of mind, by the way, to shut off a mind and go back to sleep. Wow. You have to go through everything that came up. You have to recycle it back down. You know what I'm saying? You have to like, okay, that's fine. I'll handle it. Don't worry. Don't forget to call him because you got to do that. And the radio, and then Ohio, and you're off the air. Huh? New York, okay, I'll take care of that. You run through the entire list of things that are played. Don't forget this character, going to do that. In the book, you're going to do that. And you're working that book, and that character does that. And I don't want to get up and write it down, because the minute I put hand to paper and write down anything that I have thought of, bingo, I'm up. That's it. There's something about the hand-eye coordination with paper that sets off the whole thing. The next thing is coffee and bad Santa for the rest of the day. So I go back to sleep. I'm in a fog. I don't know what I'm dreaming. I'm having a pseudo heart attack. Did you ever get one of those? A lot of guys get it in their 30s. They think they're going to die because they have young families. They're afraid. 20s, they don't feel anything. 30, right, they're near death every day. You know, they're a little gray hair, a little pudge. Right away, every other day they have a quirk. Oh, they're driving in the car. Oh, there it is. They grab. They put, oh, God, there it is. I'm going to leave them. Did I get enough insurance? Can I hear? Can I see? Am I going to die? I don't want to die so young. 2 minutes later, it passes, and they didn't have a heart attack. It was because they ate another holistic breakfast with uncooked items in it. Totally indigestible on a cold day. It's like reverse of anything sane to eat cold, raw things in the morning. But okay, it's the same people. And no mentality about the human being. Basically, it's the same as you're a Neanderthal. Neanderthals were even cooking. By the time of the Neanderthals, there was fire. And the Neanderthals, so far as I can recall, cooked things. In fact, the separation between man and the beast was the raw and the cooked. Levi Strauss wrote that seminal paper in anthropology, The Raw and the Cooked. And he said that the distinction between the uncivilized and the civilized on Earth is fire and cooking food. So now we wake up in the year 2011 and take a look what we have. Raw foods they're eating. They started with the cockamamie story, enzymes. The enzymes in raw food, but there's no enzymes in cooked food. Who came up with that one? That's like saying, I know how to save you. You know, follow this. It's unbelievable to me. There's no enzymes in cooked food. How do people live for thousands of years, idiot? Okay, so anyway, that's why you have the false heart attacks. It happened to me. I'm trying to tell you a thing. How do you think the false heart attack occurred? So the cardiologist had told me if I ever get a sense that I'm having a heart attack, I said, well, what am I supposed to do? What if it's a false? He says, get 2 chew baby aspirins, chew and swallow them immediately. I said, okay. So I think 2 seconds later, the pain went away. How would I trace it back to? Because I didn't die. It was simple. Last night after working on the radio, I had to edit my book. I had to write my book. I had to read my book. I was up late till 10 o'clock. I went home, and I had skipped dinner. So I figured I was tormented to stop at an Italian restaurant on the way home in the suburbs and grab something. But then I said, come on, Mike. The good voice started talking. Over the right shoulder is the devil. Over the left shoulder is the angel. So last night, the devil said, come on, Mike, stop in the restaurant. Get yourself. You don't have to eat heavy. You go in an Italian restaurant. And the angel says, no, you can't do it. You're trying to lose weight. The devil says, come on, give him a break. He worked hard. Stop in the restaurant. You don't have to eat sausage and peppers at 10 o'clock. You have something light at the counter. Then the angel says, don't you want to look good for the holidays? Don't you want to lose weight? You're going to add weight because you eat from now till the New Year's Eve. You have to eat. So I go home, and I eat the garbage left in the refrigerator. Again, here we go, raw foods. 10:30 at night, instead of having a hot Italian meal, I would have slept like a baby. What do I eat? I take a bagel, I toast it. What do I put on? Hummus. Okay, because it's got no cholesterol. That was bad enough trying to digest nuts in the middle of the night. Hummus is, of course, chopped up chickpeas. So that's number one, cold hummus on a bagel. And then to top it off, because I said, oh, well, that's not a hell. So I chop up a scallion. So there was the false heart attack, the scallion. 2 undigestible foods at once at 10:30. I would have been better off with meatballs and spaghetti. I would have slept like a baby. So I would have lived 3 seconds less. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are.
So here we are, another day, another nightmare from the Obama administration. It probably is a combination of incompetence and strategy to assault us every day with something so corrupt and so vile and so idiotic that the truly great crimes and misdemeanors are lost in the mass of other material. For example, Obama, Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, Hillary Clinton orchestrated the Arab Spring. We all knew what would happen. I knew it. I predicted it from day one that the Muslim Brotherhood would rise up. I was right, unfortunately. Now, if I could figure that out without any intelligence service feeding me information, surely the CIA, the FBI, DHS, whatever, could also have figured out that the Muslim Brotherhood would take over across the Arab Crescent. So therefore, they wanted this to happen. Why would they want it to happen? And how do they pose it as a form of democracy to have these fanatics take over countries that were already under authoritarian rule, but somewhat, if not neutral, friendly to the United States? Why would this administration want to see a Muslim Brotherhood activated throughout the Arab Crescent, which will be not only not friendly to us, but a threat to our interests around the world? Why? I'll let you try to figure that one out. It can't be that they didn't know this would happen. I could figure it out. Surely somebody must have told them what was going to happen. And by the same token, how could a Department of Homeland Security not have a word to say about the radical occupiers who closed down one of the busiest ports in America, threatened to close down Wall Street, and not have a word to say about them and their tie-in to the very dangerous terrorist group, the Students for a Democrat Society? I never heard of a greater acronym than that. SDS, Democrat Society. If you mean pipe bombs and police cars is democracy, my friend, leave me out of that democracy. How could the DHS have nothing to say about that and yet issue something about a turkey that could explode if you don't cook it right? Unless there's a concentrated effort or a mixture of a stupidity mixed in with an effort. Now, as I speak with you, I realize the danger I am in. As I speak with you, I realize that they're monitoring this show because they have nothing else to do. You got people with a $1 trillion budget with almost no terrorism because there's no such thing as a Muslim terrorist to the Department of Homeland Security. Therefore, who are the terrorists? I'll let you figure that one out. So who are they looking at? Certainly not Mexican drug dealers. They arrest the Border Patrol agents, not the smugglers. So who is on their list? Who is on Janet Napolitano's watch list? Tell me, who's on the list? You? Me?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, the pre-Thanksgiving special. I guess that should be for tomorrow. Astounding what we're living through. I don't know whether it's stupidity on purpose. It's hard to imagine. And now again, the shameful Republicans are genuflecting before the shame of the American people. The owl himself, Blitzer. The owl Blitzer will once again set up the Republicans for a fall. I mean, I thought I'd seen racism in my life back in the 50s, but I've never seen racism like the racism towards Herman Cain that I've seen in the last month. When I thought that racism was more or less either under, you know, sub rosa, under the cover, pushed away, no longer talked about in polite circles. And when I saw the fascistic liberals take such pleasure in tripping up Herman Cain, in attacking Herman Cain, in caricaturing Herman Cain, in lynching Herman Cain, I really got ill. I got ill looking at these drug addict junkies and how they can get away with it. And I said, what audience is there for people like Bill Maher? What audience is there for these low-life nighttime comedians that they can just attack a black man like this and not even see that they're being racist about it? And how could they get away with it? Why is no one screaming, this is, you know, over the line? Why? Who was supposed to say that? I didn't see any black people come to Herman Cain's aid. I mean, the big mouth groups. Where were the black groups? It was the Congressional Black Caucus that is oh so sensitive to everything that has even a tinge, a drop, a milli drop of race in it. There they go again. But when it came to Herman Cain, they were nowhere to be heard. Oh, they had a lot to say about the tea parties back in August. They were the first ones to unleash the Occupy on us. It was all planned in Chicago. First, the Congressional Black Caucus would open up the first volley on the tea parties, calling them every name under the sun, and no one would say anything because, as you well know, they're immune from any kind of commentary. Next came the union thugs getting up and saying, take them out. Take out the tea parties. They must be taken out. Now, in a sane society, FBI and the CIA, FBI and DHS would have investigated any union leader who said, take them out. That was a terroristic threat. Again, nothing happened. The third assault was the Occupy groups tied in with the SDS that try to close down Wall Street, try to close down the Brooklyn Bridge, and, of course, close down one of the busiest ports in America. Again, not a word out of DHS or FBI. So now what is the fourth volley coming from the Obama administration against the middle class that's saying we're not going to pay any more taxes? What do you think he's going to do next? Portland, Oregon, Ann, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. You raised a question a while ago, and my answer to you is, yes, you are the most intelligent voice in the media. And I wanted to thank you for your courage in putting yourself out there every day. And
it's not courage, it's foolishness. But the thing is I'm still a Boy Scout, and I believe that if millions of us spoke out against this outrageous regime that is running America off the rails, and the outrages that this regime gets away with on a daily basis, if 10 million of us said it in supermarket lines, at PTA meetings, I don't care where, if everybody started to say it, something would happen. I can't be the only one who sees this.
No, I don't think you're the only one who sees it, but you're the only one with the public forum that has the integrity and the courage.
Well, surely Rush Limbaugh must see it and say these things, doesn't he? I don't listen to his show. I'm busy doing other things, but I'm sure the great Rush Limbaugh says these things.
I don't listen to him.
Oh, my God. That may be a crime punishable by imprisonment for three or more days, because I think that's part and parcel of the requirement of the protocols of the elders of the Republican Party.
Dr. Savage, I've tried listening to some of the other shows.
The truth is it's a long talk day, and there's room for everybody on the air. And I do appreciate that you listen to this show. But also, let me indulge myself and you for a minute. On what basis do you make the claim I'm the most intelligent talk show host?
Because I've been listening to you since I first found you during the primaries. I listen to you every day if possible. And I am capable of critical thinking. Unfortunately, I don't have your educational, but...
But apparently you have some education, correct?
Oh yes. It's just I followed you, and the degrading of the education system, I have to agree that...
Have you read any of the books I've written?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you a copy of my novel, Abuse of Power, so you have something to entertain you on the cold nights coming up this winter.
Dr.
We'll read
Savage.
About... Yes?
There's one
yes,
more
Anne.
Point that I wanted to ask.
No, I cannot give out my personal phone number nor my address.
It's really an important point for me. Is that when you say that people are ignoring you, what you had just said, that they're listening, they're absolutely listening, and that's what also speaks to the quality of the information.
Well, here's the funny part. I'm never mentioned on Fox. I'm not allowed on because of the leprechaun. He's very thin-skinned, and he banned me from Fox News. But that's okay. But how do you explain that my books sell so well, even though I'm not ever seen in the media? Every day you open up a website from Murdoch, and it's a story about some woman with a very large derriere, with a very long name, with too much lipstick. How is that possible?
I suspect they sell so well because what's in them is of the same quality as what you deliver over the airwaves. And if you ever were to err in any of your statements, I believe that they would pounce all over you, which validates what I was saying, that you have the best information, the highest quality.
Well, I try not to make mistakes because they will take them out of context. In addition to not making overt mistakes, one of the tricks of talk radio is not saying anything that can be reconfigured against you, because they did that to me, sent it to England. The people in the U.S. government did it under Bush, by the way. Make no mistake about it. They sent it to MI6, who sent it to the British government, and I've been banned in England ever since. So you've got to be very careful with what you say in a supposedly free society. And, of course, when you send it to the land of the Magna Carta, you never know what might happen under the nanny state that's emerged there in Londonistan. Anyway, stay in the line. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. What would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation? I've raised an awful lot of good stories. Let's go to New York City. Frank, fire away from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I leave my home at 6 in the morning. I get into my office. I put in a long day. I come home at 6 at night. I have no chance to read the papers. I sit down to dinner. I turn you on. Any information I know about politics and any inroads that I can make with people who get involved with me for conversation, I use.
All right, so did you read anywhere, I mean, did you hear anywhere but on this show that the Department of Homeland Security under Janet Napolitano, who had nothing to say about the Muslim terrorists in New York, nothing to say about the violent Occupy protests, actually put out a terror warning about turkeys that may explode in a certain kind of oven? Could you believe that this is actually real?
She's a turkey herself. They have nothing important to talk about. That's why they're just filling up air. The whole damn thing is a disgrace. And as far as the Republicans setting themselves up as 6'5" clowns who get beat every time they open their mouth, I don't see why they have liberals conduct these shows.
Okay, now this goes back to what I've been saying for a long time. I fear that they're throwing the election, that they want Romney or Gingrich, worse yet, a retread, an old fat white man running against Obama. Obama wins by 25 points. If Romney runs against Obama, it's going to be a very close race because the base will not come out for Romney. The conservative base will not come out for him. You know what I'm saying? So I think that they want to throw the election, frankly. That's my worst fear, is that they actually do. I think they do. I think they do want to throw the election because the Democrats get another 4 years that way, and then the Republicans can sit on the sideline and say, oh, my God, look how bad they are. Look what they're doing. At the same time, they're dipping their beaks into the same public treasury. It's frightening. It really is, Frank. And by the way, Frank, did anyone ever tell you that your voice sounds like the Hyman Roth character in The Godfather?
Yeah, you told me that once before. Listen, the only way...
You sound... Beowulf, do you have the Hyman Roth soundbite? I want to hear this. Let me hear it.
I'm a retired investor on a pension. I went to Israel because I wished to live there as a Jew in the twilight of my life.
Was that Ben Bernanke or... Huh?
Tomorrow morning, Mike, if I pick up my hat and I don't see that money under there, then I know we don't have a deal.
Come on, Frank. Are you the actor? Yeah, you know, because I know who played Hyman Roth. It was the great theatrical director, wasn't it? It was Lee Strasberg. It was Lee Strasberg, the actor's actor. But you're not a student of Lee Strasberg's, are you?
I don't have the time to read because I have to make a living. And as far as I'm...
Yeah, but how did you just do such a deadpan copy of the Roth character when I wake up in the morning if the money's not under the pillow?
Why? It's black against black. Now, Obama screwed up so badly, and these people who feel guilty about voting for blacks or not, they have to come up with McCain. It's a lock if they put McCain up.
What do you mean, McCain or Kane?
Kane, I'm sorry.
Kane. Well, you see, this is interesting. Kane and McCain, it's very interesting. That's an interesting one unto itself. But, okay, we can go into that another time. Listen, Frank, I'm going to send you. Did I send you Abuse of Power yet?
I never got it.
Did I tell you were getting it?
Yes.
All right, you get it today. Hyman, stay in the line. Hyman Roth, stay in the line. Beowulf, get the phone, get the address of Hyman Roth as long as it's not in Cuba. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. I'll make love to you. I'll make love to you. Well, I saw a gal walking down the street.
I was reading a little history last night about the fall of Rome. And in the reading of the fall of Rome, I know it's off the topic. I read about the Huns and how the Huns under Attila would invade a city and destroy the city and leave it depopulated. Now, I don't want to jump to some stupid conclusion here and to say that we have been invaded by the Huns here in the United States of America, but if you were to draw an analogy in a brief sentence or two. How would you describe the economically unproductive citizens that are running the United States of America at the federal level? They are the economically unproductive elements of society, by the way. Aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen, by the way, were considered the economically unproductive citizens of the late empire of Rome. The aristocrats, civil servants, and churchmen. Idleness, in other words, they don't really produce anything. Do the aristocrats of America, who would be who? Who are the aristocrats of America? Inherited wealth. They basically produce nothing. Civil servants produce nothing, by and large, except the police, perhaps. The police are out on the front lines. Don't confuse everyone who has a bunch of badges on their chest with a hero. Some of them sit behind a desk all their lives, and they get a badge for sitting at a desk. So how would you define them? I mean, my definition of the Obama administration is a little different than most of the time. Now it's well accepted by those who have an intelligent knowledge of history that we have a communist in the White House. Say, oh, that can't be. It hasn't been written. It hasn't been written about in the New York Times. Or he could not be a Marxist because they said it's not true on CNN. So what if he is a Marxist? Why doesn't he just come out and say he proudly represents the Marxist wing of the Democrat Party? Why would that be so hard? Because nobody would elect them again. They'd say, oh, that's not good. They don't know what Marxism is, but they know it's bad. And you can't make the jokes about the community. Everyone knows it means communist and revolution and, you know, oppression of people. That's basically what they think. But how different is, let's say you're on the Obama side. How do you define a man who refuses to cut back on spending and instead wants to attack the middle class with increased taxation? How else would you define him? His target is the middle class over and over again, the middle class. I don't care. You can define the middle class any way you want, but when you every time you say the rich and it hits the middle class after he flies back from meeting with the super rich who give him the money to get reelected, what does that tell you? It tells you that it's all a fraud. Then you got the Republicans getting ready now to get up and make a fool of themselves in front of the shameful Wolf Blitzer. Let's go to the callers instead. I don't think anyone cares about any of this. Honestly, I don't think anyone cares. I don't think they care that Corzine's company is short $1.2 billion. So what? So what? Big deal. What are you making a big deal of it? So what that he was a Democrat governor in New Jersey and he screwed everybody in New Jersey? So what? What are you going to do about it? That's not a real crime. Look what Bush did. $1.2 billion. That's nothing compared to the Iraq war. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. So what if the DHS had nothing to do with any cases to do with Occupy taking over Oakland or illegal aliens or won't protect our border? They're concerned about turkeys. Isn't that good enough for you? They don't want people to have turkeys explode in outdoor ovens. So, okay, well, that's the story. I mean, that's really the story. Do I have time for a caller? No, I don't have time for a caller, but I'll tell you this. I do have word for you from one of my important sponsors. And, you know, you hear about them very regularly because, look, this show is about intelligence and passing on your wisdom, right? Your knowledge, okay? I'll tell you knowledge. What you have, you want to pass on to your children and grandchildren. But what if your hearing is bad? You can lose it because you don't really know what, they don't know what you're saying. You can't hear what the kids are saying. So you need effective two-way communication, right? So there's a new medical breakthrough that I've been telling you about for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. It is a revolutionary solution. I spoke to the owners. It's 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. You want to learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will continue to cherish for a lifetime? Then please call 1-800-953-5453. ENVOYmedical.com. I cannot emphasize enough how important this is for those of you who are involved with this particular situation. That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today, would you please? 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem, visit envoymedical.com. The Department of Homeland Security is taking any threat seriously during the Thanksgiving holiday, including the ominous threat to our national security posed by turkey fryers. We'll tell you more about the threat of turkey fryers when I return.
Savage.
go back to the money. Let's follow the money. The Corzine situation. So they said that due to a unknown reasons, there's $1.2 billion missing in his bankrupt firm. How is this possible? How could this be possible? $1.2 billion doesn't just disappear. It has to be somewhere. Have you recently read a story that reads like this? Due to a rapid withdrawal by armed men with masks, the bank has a shortfall of $100,000 in its cash drawer. Or have you seen this recently? Or the bank opened 1,000 customer safe deposit boxes, which were surprisingly found to be empty, and the bank doesn't know where the contents are. But the shortfall is being investigated by the bank itself. Or have you read this story in the New York papers yesterday or today? The valet parking lot reported that 5,000 cars could not be located. The shortfall is being investigated by the parking lot attorney. How could you see a thing like this and not start screaming? You talk about corruption. You talk about an out-of-control situation. MF Global goes bankrupt, and the regulators can't find $1.2 billion that is missing. Corzine has not been brought in for questioning. Instead, there's going to be a hearing, and they're going to bring in the people who were supposed to oversee this type of fund, who all worked for him, or several of them worked for him as colleagues in previous administrations. How in the world could this be going on at this time? This is clearly a case for the FBI, but what can I say to you? Under Eric Holder, I kind of doubt that Corzine will be given a question. You know what I'm saying? Sacramento Darrell, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, you were asking earlier about what else we can call Obama besides a communist or anything like that. I just call him a thief and all the federal government. How else do we end up?
Let's pause for a minute. Obama himself, has he benefited financially from his presidency? The answer is no.
Right.
But his donors have. His donors have apparently done very well indeed. Look at the donors who gave him money who wound up with hundreds of millions of dollars in return in guaranteed loans from the federal tax, from the Treasury. This is not crony capitalism. This is something else. It may be legal, but it certainly looks to us like corruption, right?
Absolutely. And the whole federal establishment government, the way we have it right now set up, how anyone is not just absolutely insanely mad that we're $15 trillion in debt. If we had a balanced budget, if we actually had the government had no debt right now, we had reserves, we would have none of these problems we're talking about. Absolutely none. No one has stepped up to actually get it balanced. And then where's the $15 trillion go? Who are we supposed to
No, during the recent super committee hearings, the Democrats on the committee wanted to raise the amount of money they could spend by at least another $1 trillion, and they wanted to raise taxes by $1 trillion. And that's because they have not yet learned any lessons from the electorate. And they know that no matter what the people think, it doesn't matter because the people don't matter in a rigged system. As long as they can unleash thugs in the streets, mobs in the streets, threaten people, say take them out and nothing happens, they're going to intimidate you at the poll. My guess is there's going to be voter intimidation across the land by the time of the next election. And it'll be done in a way that won't even be called voter intimidation. They started it this summer by attacking the Tea Parties. They started it when the union said, take them out. They started it with the Occupy groups. I believe there's going to be massive movements against legitimate voters who are fed up. And that's what disturbs me. And I don't know if it's a desire on their part to bring about a civil war or not. Now I'm getting very deadly serious about it. This country has not been this divided since the American 60s, at the very least since the 60s. This country is at each faction against faction, race against race. It's classic Democrat divide and conquer. It is class warfare, and then it is race warfare. That's what Obama is indulging in. And so where are the Republicans on this? Daniel in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I believe Romney can win this thing, but he's got to go at Obama. He's got to take off the gloves and go at him on a daily basis.
What gloves? Why do you assume Romney has gloves on?
Well, I don't know, but
I think what you see with Romney is what you get, a very polite man who has raised a very fine family, a very decent human being who does not have the fire in the belly necessary to be the president of the United States, in my estimation. He has no animus to really be the president. He seems to be running because his father was a governor, and he somehow wants to supersede his father. But I really don't see a man who really is qualified in that regard, who has a real passion to save this country from the morass we are in. There's nothing more I could say, and there's no point belaboring it. You know, let's say, what, anything new up there? Michigan, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael. I've been listening to you for about, I'd say, 3 or 4 years now, and I'm telling you what, you're great, just great. I love you, man.
Where are you in Michigan? Where am I allowed to be heard in Democrat Michigan?
Okay, I'm actually live in Escanaba, Michigan.
Where is that? Where is that, up in the peninsula?
Yep, it's up in the peninsula.
And you wouldn't think that a guy from New York knows where Ashkenaza was.
I'm deer hunting right now, and...
No, that's nice. Be sure, you're not with Dick Cheney, are you?
No, I'm not.
I say be careful if you're out hunting with Mr. Cheney. Make sure you wear a lot of bright colors. Wear a lot of bright colors the next time you go to a Republican fundraiser if he's speaking. So what'd you call about, Mike?
You know where the Mackinac Bridge is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The streets of Mackinac? I'm up by there.
So a lot of deer running around there, huh?
Yes, yes. The hunting's been real good. Hey, listen, what I wanted to say is what happened...
So let me ask you, I'm always curious as a city boy. I live near an area, one of my houses, there's deer abound on the hill, and I love the creatures, they're beautiful, but I eye them with a certain degree of knowledge that if it all comes down, I could, you know, shoot one and eat it, right? But is it really that difficult to so-called dress a deer? What do you? I saw in the Boy Scout manual, you hang it by its feet and you cut its neck?
Now, what we do is right after you shoot it, and of course you put your license on it if it's a buck, and if it's a buck, you put a tag on its horns.
Well, you got to make sure the Department of Homeland Security investigates the deer, that's for sure. But, yeah, then what do you do?
Yeah, you look around real carefully, you know. You start down by the genitals down there, the butt area.
Yeah,
and then you got to go
around. Well, what do you mean you start down around the genitals? What do you do? I mean, be graphic. I really would like to know. I want to learn.
Okay, here goes. You go down by the butthole, and you take your knife, which is about 4 inches long, and you insert.
That's nice. Okay, that's a good start. And where does all of the body parts go? You're in a bucket, or you leave it hit the ground?
You leave it hit the ground.
Yep. The whole thing. I mean, you cut out the anus, and all of the guts fall out.
No. Then you work your way up, and it's got a membrane there, the stomach, like we have. And then you go to the left, and you go to the right, and you cut up till you get up to the sternum.
Mm-hmm. So you cut open the peritoneum, and you let the guts fall out of the front of the animal?
Yeah, and then you reach in, you cut the animal's windpipe, and you reach in, and you almost literally pull all the guts and everything out with your hands, and you move it to the side.
Very nice. Now, let me ask you something about this. So people don't get too squeamish, because hunting goes on around the world. You make certain the animal died quickly, right? Usually with one good shot, that animal feels nothing after that, correct?
That's the primary objective, is when you shoot it, it's down.
Yeah, you know, certainly don't make the animal suffer. I mean, let's be clear, so that people don't get the wrong idea here about people who know how to hunt. People go to a supermarket and buy a lamb chop, but they won't kill a lamb, okay? Somebody kills the lamb, right?
Right, right.
Mike, how many years have you been hunting?
Oh, man, I've been hunting since 84, about almost 20 years now.
Were you a little kid when your dad gave you your first 22?
Yes, I was. I was 14 years old.
And what was the first rifle? What was it, a Ruger? What was the first 22 rifle that you got?
The first rifle I ever shot was a 22 automatic.
No, but I mean, what maker? What manufacturer?
Oh, man. Oh.
Do you remember? Never mind. I'm just curious, because people don't realize it, even though I'm like this. I was on a rifle team in Jamaica High School. No one believed this. Do you know that back when I went to high school, there was a rifle team with a range in the basement of Jamaica High School in Queens, New York. Would you believe it? And the teachers were all World War II veterans who knew how to use guns. That's when America was a great country, incidentally, when they still taught boys how to shoot a rifle in a municipal high school in New York. And by the way, none of us ever ran out with the gun and shot ourselves or anybody else. Ever since the liberals took over the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical establishment and the educational establishment, that's when the murder started, when they started mucking around with people's minds with psychedelic drugs called whatever you want to call them. Nobody ever grabbed a gun and ran upstairs screaming jihad in the halls of Jamaica High School with a rifle.
Wow.
You know, and there's another side story to this hunting story, Mike, that I got to tell you and everyone else listening. You're not loaded right now, are you?
Pardon?
Is your gun loaded at this time?
It's dark out. I'm done. I'm just kind of cruising around.
Oh, no, because I didn't know it could go off in the middle of it. You said you're hunting. I thought maybe I could hear a shot yet ring out in the middle of it. You know, it's partly comedic what we're doing, but it's also deadly serious stuff, Mike. America is a nation of hunters, incidentally. It's a great American tradition. It's something that the Eastern establishment sneers at. The very same people who eat endangered species at banquets laugh at a guy like you. That you well know, right?
Oh, I hope not.
No, I hope not, too. But you know they hate people who love God and guns. You know that.
Right, right.
In World War II, I'm going back to a time when everybody can recognize we had a great military that knew how to defeat the enemy. They got a lot of boys from the Midwest and from places like you who grew up hunting deer, hunting rabbits, etc., who had never flown an airplane. They enlisted in the Air Force. They taught them how to fly planes. And I read over and over again stories that the guys who grew up hunting knew how to lead an animal. You know what that is, of course, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You have to aim ahead of the animal if it's running because it'll run into the bullet. And the average guy wouldn't understand that. They'll aim right at the animal and it'll miss because the animal will run away from where the trajectory will take the bullet. So these guys said that they learned how to shoot down enemy aircraft because they had hunted as kids. And I never forgot that story, Mike. It's because this nation had a tradition of using weapons. It's because we have a tradition of the Second Amendment that we were able to defeat the enemy in World War II. And all I can say is, as long as it's humane, God bless the hunters, Mike. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well.
This song is dedicated to Ben Bernanke. All right, turn it off already. So Zuccotti Park, the bums and the degenerates are thrown out, and the union hard hats are back there eating. People have taken back the park, the real people, back to normal at Zuccotti Park. Hard hats working at the World Trade Center enjoyed their lunch, free of the Occupy Wall Street degenerates, the tents, the drums, and the drug addicts. And they're all union men, by the way. Local 580 iron worker, Vinny Del Principe, age 40, chomping on a sandwich, said, "This was our spot. Now that they finally got rid of all the degenerates, it's ours again." That's a union worker. Another one says, another local 580 iron worker, Thomas Hammond, 45, said, "It's the best thing the city could have done, finally throw everyone out of here." You hear? Another one says, they were glad, in other words, they threw the bums out. And so the only remnant now is they cleaned up the droppings of the people. And two individuals who said they were roughed up by cops during an OWH-related protest filed a federal lawsuit against the city, no doubt helped by the communist lawyers, the National Lawyers Guild. Heather Carpenter and Julio Jose Jimenez Artunduaga seek unspecified damages for their October 15th encounter outside of Greenwich Village Citibank branch. I hope the judge throws the book at them and puts them in jail, by the way. You know, two can play the same game. Why doesn't the NYPD sue them? Why don't they countersue these people for false claims? I wonder why that's not permitted. You know, that's an interesting one. But okay, that's the way this system was set up by the American Bar Association. Aries by Sally Brompton. The past few months may have been tough, but you'll make up for it big time now that the sun is moving into one of the best areas of your solar chart. What you did before is irrelevant. It's what you do next that counts. All right, terrific, whatever that means. I'm addicted. I read the horoscope every day. How could she know me? How could it be that I'm a part of a horoscope? How is that possible? Does anyone believe in horoscope? I don't know. I read it, though, and sometimes it's astonishingly accurate. Shocking. Shocking. It never talks about the thievery in the Obama administration, though. I wish that the horoscopes talked about the $1.2 billion missing in Corzine's company, MF, and could tell us where it is. Like, if you look in this bank and turn that corner and went into Zurich and turned and opened that gold bar, you'll definitely find the $1.2 billion missing. But I never saw that in any of the horoscopes. Every day I open up the New York Post website, they're getting demented. Again, it's a woman with an overly sized posterior, with an overly long name, with too much lipstick, and something about a fake wedding. What is this? I don't even know who she is. I've no idea why the country's obsessed with a woman with an overly large derriere, with overly large lips, and an overly long name. I have no idea. South Carolina, Brenda, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. My name's Linda, and I'm going to go right to the dream I had about Teddy, if that's okay with you.
Fire away.
We were talking on the phone. I had called you a bit argumentative in reality about your books. Then I walk out of my room. I come back in. You're sitting in our visiting room with my husband, Ben. Teddy's on a big back green chair, laying so pretty. And I've never seen Teddy. Just so pretty.
And what happened? Is something bad happen in your dream or good?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's amazing. I've been just tenaciously trying to get a hold of you to tell you this.
Oh, no. So what happened? So how does it end? How the dream end?
Oh, it's wonderful. You're sitting in a chair, and all of a sudden, instead of me listing all your books, the 8 books that I had, we started talking about titles to another book. Only you were writing it.
All right, but where does Teddy fit in? How does it end with Teddy? What does he do?
You're telling me that you're going to write a book about Teddy, and we're trying to come up with titles.
Oh, well, it's actually true. I proposed it to my agent a year ago, and no publisher wanted it. But I actually think it would be one of the best books I ever wrote. Here. That's pretty good. Now, that's worth listening to this.
Until
I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power, written by Michael Savage, Teddy's handler. Teddy's handler. Now a whole complexity arose with Thanksgiving. I didn't want to tell you about it. I can't bring Teddy because there's an infant. I don't want to get started. Teddy's never been left alone. He's spoiled. He's 7 years old. I can't leave him alone. So it's like it's a series of events because the woman who watches them, unfortunately, her mother, you know, was on a, you know, getting really sick, and she had to fly to Florida. So she's not going to be here to watch Teddy during Thanksgiving. So that means I have the dog. So that means I can't bring him, because if I bring him, there's an infant that could hurt the infant. So what's my choice? Now leave him at home with the other dogs in the bathroom with a bowl of water? What if the hunter shows up with the knife and wants to go to the rear quarter? I mean, I can't do it. So it's a pastiche of so I have a choice. I could stay with the dog and go over there, run down the street. Complex, very complex. Nothing's ever clear. Nothing is ever clean, ever. There's always a challenge, no matter what you do. Incidentally, Teddy is an 11-pound, 10 or 11-pound gray or silver poodle, toy poodle they call him, but he's no toy. He's my boy. That's what I sing to him every day. There's my Teddy. There's my boy. I sing him a song every day. He does. He really does know what I... They love it. I love when he's asleep and I talk to him and he smiles. They smile. They have feelings, which leads you to the whole thing. Doesn't the deer, but doesn't have a baby, and... That's for the hunter to decide before he takes the knife to the rear quarters of the deer. I don't know how you deal with a thing like that. I know that the dog is no bigger than a large hare. That's why I never order a rabbit in a restaurant. It's supposed to be low in cholesterol, but there's some meats I won't eat. A cow, all right, I've been in a slaughterhouse. I didn't like it particularly. It was horrible. The cow knew it was going to die. The cow was so frightened, it was shocking. It was in Fiji. It was horrendous. It knew it was going to die. It got so scared as they pushed it into the stockade. They heard its friends dying. It was awful, horrible. I haven't stopped eating. I hardly eat it much. I'm going back to the hippie tofu era again. I tried frying it up, but I can't digest it. I get pains from it. I can digest meat more easily than I can tofu. My body's not made for beans, like beans and all of that. It's not my ethnic group. There are ethnic groups that do well with beans. They have the enzymes for it. You think I'm kidding you, don't you? After millions of years of evolution, my people were not big on the beans and the grains. Grains, yes, okay, yes, but not beans. Let's put it to you that way. In the southern hemisphere, they like the bean and the rice, and they have the enzyme for it. That's the truth. It doesn't mean northern Europeans can't eat beans and rice. I know many do, but they're not adapted particularly for the rice and bean diet. Just take a look at what's happened to their brain chemistry as a result. If they went back to meat and potatoes, they might be smarter and see the danger we're actually in. And pay attention, boys and girls, to the most important warning from the Department of Homeland Security, that turkey might explode. That costs us $1 trillion to find out. Don't cook a frozen turkey in an outdoor oven.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I couldn't invent what I'm about to tell you. The Department of Homeland Security has issued a warning over turkey fryers. I'm not making this up. If it was a parody, a joke, I would tell you so. Here is the DHS, which refuses to stop the Occupy terrorists who have closed down a very busy port in America, one of the busiest in the world, the Oakland, California port, have tied up a city of San Francisco for weeks now. Almost tied up Wall Street, refused to get involved in the apprehension or arrest of a Muslim terrorist, but they issued a warning over not putting a turkey fryer that's previously frozen into a fryer because it could explode. What do you think this tells you about Janet Napolitano? Do you think Janet Napolitano should be issuing a warning of this sort? In the wake of this story, and information that the federal government refused to pursue the terror case in New York City, nor to protect us from the Occupy terrorists. Do you actually protect DHS? Do you actually trust DHS to protect us from the next terrorist attack? Topic number two on the Savage Nation. John Corzine's company, MF Global, is missing $1.2 billion of investors' money. Why hasn't Corzine been arrested yet? Do you believe that the political connections of some in this country are so strong that they're legally the untouchables of this time? Do you think that there are untouchables? You know there are. An article in the left-wing Washington Post declares that Americans this year are having a less food-centric Thanksgiving. One expert declares that eating a bountiful meal is so last century. I guess it was an anorexic journalist. Another topic, and a very serious one, a left-wing terrorist group, SDS, leftovers from the 60s, has reappeared at the Occupy protests across the nation. Do you fear the same kind of left-wing violence and civil unrest today as we had in the late 60s? Yes, we're having it now. We'll have more on the deep frying linked to terrorism by Janet Napolitano, right here on the Savage Nation. Let's go to michaelsavage.com. LA officials offer Occupy office space and farmland to the terrorists in the streets. John Kerry and other Democrats demanded $1 trillion in a tax hike. Petty Pelosi argues she's more an authority than the Pope on issues of conscience. Even uber-liberal American Bar Association rejects most of Obama's women minority judge appointees as being unqualified. You can imagine who they are. General Accounting Office says illegals caused nearly half of border fires. Terrorist weather underground is back. Friend of Bill Ayers, friend of the president. Military law, a law professor, himself a military man, quits a college in Massachusetts after one of his law colleagues calls care packages for troops shameful. Muslim Brotherhood to take over Egypt. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. MF Global trustees under John Corzine says shortfall could exceed $1.2 billion.
County
county officials have released a list on 93 complaints against the protesters. The complaints include drug and alcohol use, littering, and bathing in county bathrooms. Artwork has also been vandalized, but county officials can't link that to protesters. Now, the most shocking accusation is that officials found 200 pounds of human feces near the County Veterans Memorial Building, which is just across the street from, right across the bridge, excuse me, from the camp.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Hazmat crew removes 200 pounds of feces at Occupy San Diego site. I mean, Occupy Santa Cruz. NASCAR crowd boos Michelle Obama. Al-Qaeda sympathizer arrested in terror plot. Newt Gingrich is surging, which tells you an awful lot about the others. Satellite shows activity at alleged Iran nuke site. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Muslim goat sacrifice blocked in Florida. Chicken jerky treats from China linked to mystery illnesses and deaths in dogs. And finally on michaelsavage.com, Disney composer who wrote the music for Sesame Street charged with distributing child pornography. He admitted that he sent pictures of a four-year-old girl in handcuffs to friends. Sesame Street, a show I never let my children watch. Big Bird is a pervert. You heard it first in the Savage Nation. The first printing of Abuse of Power is almost sold out. If you want it for Christmas, buy it now at Amazon or in your local bookstore. 1-800-449-8255. Just how far up does the Abuse of Power reach? Read the book while you can. You understand why the government is uncomfortable with independent analysts like myself. I didn't say that I have inside information, but I have a fundamental ability to think. So I'm asking questions that an informed citizen not only should ask, but is asking. And I'm asking who was in charge of making that decision to put all of those SEALs in one helicopter, number one. Number two, why has no one been fired? That's the start with. Then we have the financial meltdown. Again, nobody's taking responsibility. We got Obama saying it's not my fault, tax the rich, even though he's every other day he's with the rich. Then you got the idiot of idiots, the biggest. There's no words for Geithner. Everyone knows he's an office boy. Everybody knows that Geithner is an office boy for people who are making billions of dollars on Wall Street. Everyone knows that. The guy looks it, he sounds it, and he is it. You ready for this? Remember the fairness doctrine that we thought was put to rest? A new FCC commissioner, one of them, warns of a backdoor way into the fairness doctrine. There could still be an effort to finding a backdoor to eliminate Michael Savage and others in talk radio. A proposal that would give the federal government the ability to make sure broadcasters serve their communities could also be used to wedge in principles of the fairness doctrine. The government could be compiling data as to what kind of content you were airing and whether the government thought that was appropriate content. You hear this? The government has to decide whether it's appropriate content? You mean I'm criticizing Geithner, so he says that's inappropriate content? Or I'm criticizing some doofus in the military for this decision, so he says, oh, hey, get him off the air, that's inappropriate content? That's communism, Johnson. That's totalitarian. Pass the fairness doctrine. I'm coming out of retirement, and I'll have 10 million people marching around America. How's that? You try to pull this one, I'll organize 10 million people with everybody else in radio. It could be political speech, they say. It could be shows on baking or gardening. But we don't know where the government is headed. This is your government at work. This is your government at work. But the worst of your foes is the sun overhead. You must wear your helmet for all that is said. If he finds you uncovered, he'll knock you down dead, and you'll die like a fool of a soldier, fool, fool, fool of a soldier. When first under fire and you're wishful to duck, don't look nor take, eat at the man that is struck. Be thankful you're living and trust to your luck, and march to your front like a soldier, front, front, front like a soldier. And when you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains, and the women come out to cut up what remains, just roll on and go to your God like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Go, go, go like a soldier. Soldier of the Queen.
Savage. it's taking back what is ours in America, what we've earned, and what it deserves us. We have basically put into this country, and we deserve to get back what we've put into it.
This little rat, a 25-year-old idiot who did nothing in his life, what we've put into the country, you... See, if we had a government, which we don't, we have gangsters running every level of government, by and large, to the 99th percentile. The 99% of politicians are nothing but, how many different words do I have to describe the same thing? Graft, corruption, lobbyist. It's all one and the same. And so that this permits a vacuum to form, and in the vacuum, the rats come out. Now, the rats are being organized by the unions, which is being organized by Axelrod of the presidency, which was funded originally and orchestrated by the Soros money. It's all been traced. It's all been documented. Now, the media, what role does the media have in all of this? Here is a report of what happened from a local newspaper, and I'm not making up one word. This comes from the Oakland, from Time magazine. And listen to how they're glorifying the shutting down of the fourth largest maritime port in America, how they're glorifying burning and looting and attacking police. This is Time magazine, a long, long, long history of Stalinism in Time magazine. Their headline is How Occupy Oakland is Stealing Occupy Wall Street's Mojo. I'm going to read it to you. As promised, the Occupy Oakland movement on Wednesday spilled from its home base in front of City Hall, halting street traffic and blocking access to banks and businesses that defied its calls for general strike. The mood, for the most part, was festive, full of homegrown pride for a hard-luck city enjoying a rare moment in the global spotlight. Concerts and prayer sessions, free barbecue and ice cream were among the offerings to a motley mix of protesters. Cannabis smoke was widespread, and of course there were a lot of speeches. In the main amphitheater, on top of trucks in the middle of the street, the day of mass action culminated with a shutdown of the Port of Oakland, where as many as 7,000 people gathered peacefully to stop trucks in their tracks. Before things took a violent turn overnight for the second week in a row. I'm not going to read the rest of it because they're lying when they say it was a group of anarchists. It was not anarchists. It was the occupiers per se. In fact, I will go to Oakland developer Phil Tagami, who used a shotgun to scare off these vermin. Developer with shotguns scared off Oakland rioters. It took a Japanese-American named Phil Tagami, who came out with a shotgun and scared them away from rioting and destroying his downtown building. He owned a big building called the Landmark Rotunda Building on Frank Ogawa Plaza outside City Hall. He helped redevelop it. And he said, we had people who were attempting to break into our building, Tagami said. He grabbed a shotgun that he usually keeps at home, went down to the ground floor, discouraged them, he said. No police were in sight. He said, basically, people were pushing to get through the door. I was standing there, and they just saw me there, and I lifted it. I didn't point it. I just held it in my hands. And I just racked it and they ran. Although they didn't get inside the building, Tagami, age 46, oversaw its $50 million renovation and has an office there. Vandals did scrawl graffiti on the outside walls during the post-midnight riot. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the reason this is happening is because the governor of the state of California is a lifetime socialist, a lifetime radical. Moonbeam Brown should have called out the National Guard and stopped these vermin. Instead, they're winking and nodding at them. The mayor of Oakland should have been arrested for encouraging this. The newspapers have thrown gasoline on the fire by glorifying these rats. And who do you think is the biggest victim here? The police. The police are being sent in and being told not to stop them. Then they're being told to do stop them. Then they're being told don't stop them too hard. Then they're being told don't do stop them too hard. What would you do if you were a cop? I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have called out the National Guard if I were the governor of the state of California. I would have arrested every single one of them. I would have disbarred any lawyer who was engaged in this riot. I would have said, you've thrown away your law license. You're not an officer of the law. You're a piece of garbage. Your law license, I'll rip it up and throw it out of the street. That's all. Take your law license and wipe you know what with it. What kind of government is this that encourages this kind of behavior? And the answer is we have no government. We have government anarchy. And there's a reason for it. Why do you suppose there are riots in the streets of America right now? Do you think they're spontaneous? They were organized. The Congressional Black Caucus started the attack in August by ripping apart the Tea Party. Then came the union thug who came out and said that you should take out the Tea Party. Then they unleashed these mobs of anarchists and communists and disenfranchised Morons who can't get a job, and we know why they can't get a job. They're unemployable. They have no skills. And so now we see the first phase of the Marxist revolution in the United States of America. And, of course, there is a reason that it's happening under Barack Obama. That's because the number of scandals in his administration has reached a critical mass. One scandal after another. One corrupt billion-dollar deal after another. $900 million missing here. $1.2 billion given there. Pelosi's brother-in-law gets a $900 million deal. No one says a word. So what do? They unleash the mobs to throw smoke in your eyes so you don't really see what's going on. It's all part of the corruption. And if you want to talk about it, you can then throw into the mix why they're attacking Herman Cain again. I don't want to do it again. We know why. Because he's a threat to the Republican establishment and the Democrat establishment. He's just liable to do what America wants, which is clean up the mess and cut out the corruption. So last night, the rabble in the streets shut down the Port of Oakland, the fifth largest cargo port in the United States of America. They destroyed stores, smashed ATMs, and the police were forced to use tear gas. Do you believe this is the start of a violent revolution in America? Do you? Are you a supporter of violence in the Occupied Wall Street movement? And how do you claim to justify your actions? I'll go into that later on because it's a very important topic. In New York City, the Occupy Wall Streeters have been investigated by a newspaper. And it turns out that according to New York City arrest records, many Occupy Wall Street protesters live in luxury. For each of the 984 Occupy Wall Street protesters arrested in New York City, you hear this? They looked at their home addresses, and they had a median value of over $500,000. Most of them were white. Most of them lived in very, very good surroundings. Most of them are just spoiled brats who have nothing to do. All they want to do is get stoned and break things. Where is the leadership? Why is there no National Guard? If we had a governor in the state of California who was a real governor, he would have governed by calling out the National Guard. If we had a governor worth anything, he would have overridden the useless mayor that you have in New York City, and he would have called out the National Guard. But we don't have leadership. We have lobbyists, and we have party animals. 1-800-449-8255. Also, I want to talk about something that has nothing to do with this. I don't know if it does. I had a very, very clear dream, and I don't know if any of you in the audience will relate to it, but I often tell of my dreams on this show. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Right now, the Communist News Network is hosting what seems like the 1 millionth Republican debate, and I, for one, am not watching it. So joining us right now on the Savage Nation to tell us what really is going on is James Carafano, the director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies and a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. James Carafano, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to be back on the show. It's an awesome show, and I always feel privileged when I get to chime in.
So first of all, why are the Republicans subjecting themselves to all of these debates? What's the point?
Well, I think there's been about 11 debates with all the candidates so far. That's actually about what the Democrats had when they debated. I think they had 15. So it's perfectly appropriate. American people, and there's lots of issues to talk about. And I think that's why this one's the most important, because we've never had a debate just on national security and foreign policy. It's a huge part of the job. People need to hear what kind of leader this person is going to be. And you can only do that if you have 90 minutes to really devote to the topic.
Why is this debate more important than any of the others? They just say the same things over and over again.
You know, there's an old saying that you get domestic policies wrong, you may lose a couple of votes. You get foreign policy wrong, people get killed. This is the most important part of the job. And what they actually say during the debate doesn't really matter. I mean, what policy prescription they're going to have. I mean, 18 months from now, when you put your hand on the Bible, I mean, the world's going to be a different place. But what's really important is what kind of leader are you going to be? And I really think that you need to hear these people talk about these issues. And in 90 minutes, you can't duck, you can't weave. At some point, you got to tell somebody what kind of military commander can it be, what kind of foreign policy president you're going to be. You have to reveal who you are. So I think this is the most important debate of the campaign.
Since this is a foreign policy debate, who do you think is most qualified to keep this country safe?
You know, that's why I'm really, really proud that AEI and the Heritage Foundation sponsored this, because – it really does give a level playing field. There aren't any gotchas. You can't say, oh, got caught off guard. I didn't have enough sleep or something. Everybody's had plenty of time to get ready. It's an open book test. They know what the questions are in the sense that they know the issues we're going to focus on. You can't have an excuse to walk away from this one and say, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready to talk about the tough issues.
How serious of a threat is the situation with Iran? Do you actually think any of the GOP candidates are able to handle that situation?
I think Iran is the number one trouble spot in the world. I think it's the flashpoint that could lead to World War III. And that's why I want to spend a lot of time hearing about what kind of person these people are going to be. I want to give my goal in this debate is to let the American people have enough information so they can judge for themselves who they're going to trust with the security and the future of this nation.
If you were the moderator, what is the most important question in your mind that all of these Republican candidates should be answering tonight?
I think the most important thing is for them to give a sense to the American people that when it comes time to make a decision to send our men and women into harm's way, what kind of leader are they going to be? Are they going to have the confidence and the character and the moral sense of value to really do the right thing and to put the nation ahead of politics? And that's my big concern is that we have a president in the White House who puts everything through a political lens and says, what's best for foreign policy and what's best for national security is what's best for my reelection campaign. I think that's wrong, and I want a leader that believes the opposite of that.
James Carafano, thanks for being with us today on The Savage Nation.
Thanks again for bringing people's attention to this debate. I think it's the most important debate of the campaign. So it's the one chance where folks have got to hear for 90 minutes about how these people would lead as commander-in-chief. I don't think there's more important information the American people need. So you bringing their attention to that, that's kudos to you.
But we've talked enough about this. Most of my books, not all, have been on the New York Times bestseller list now, but I've never written fiction, commercial fiction, let's put it that way. We all write drivel fiction, cafe fiction, SDSI fiction, maudlin, depressing, introspective, whiny, navel-watching fiction. I'm sorry. It's getting out of my system. Everybody I know has written something like that. Beowulf, am I right? Everybody in the Bay Area has written that kind of stuff, right? Everyone writes that introspective, overly analytical fiction that nobody would ever read because it's so boring. You know, Mary sat in the cafe writing about herself, looking at herself in the mirror and wondering how long it would be until someone noticed her writing about herself and looking at herself in her pocket mirror. When suddenly Mary noticed that she had to go to the restroom. So Mary will put her pen down. Now she shifts from the third to the first person. So Mary will put her pen down now and go to the bathroom and come back and pray someone has noticed her writing her great American novel in the cafe so that she could sneer at them, implying that they're interrupting her thought process in the public space of a cafe. I love to watch. I used to do it. I don't do it anymore. I used to love to watch the poseurs in San Francisco sit in cafes. You know, sit with the journal and the pen, you know, really intently. You see them all over New York, don't you? Probably even in Louisiana, Texas, wherever you are, there's always the posers, the macchiato drinkers. I would have said the cappuccino drinkers, but I got to go one step further. The macchiato drinkers, okay? Because that's like the next level of self-indulgent torture. Those who go into cafes and ask for such special drinks, you want to throttle them. Do you ever go with the Starbucks to get behind one of these cretins? I'll have a double macchiato mocha with a special. I want the beans to come from 5,000 feet, and I want the water to be special well water that was delivered specially from Sonoma County on that particular well over in the area where the pesticides from the herbicides don't leak into the herbicides. And by the way, I want it to be a double, not a triple. And please make sure there's extra foam. And then I want, and they go through this list, and you're standing there. I have to get back to the studio and get a coffee. And I go out just to get a break, and I can't get the coffee. And then they get some poor kid from college who can't get a job, who thought that they'd be something important by now, writing it down. It's unbelievable. So I buy a banana and leave kind of thing. But the city is filled with those types who write in their journals these, as I say, maudlin, introspective, overly analytical, self-absorbent novels that nobody would ever read. So I used to like watching them in the cafes because Hemingway knew what they were called in Paris, and they were called poseurs, P-O-S-E-U-R-S. Paris allegedly, Paris had their share of poseurs in cafes in his day. Just as I am sure in Aristotle's day, there were poseurs you know, pretending to be philosophers. Probably in Moses' time, there was someone sitting around with a chisel and a piece of marble, leaning over the marble with the chisel. Leaning over the marble with the chisel for hours, trying to figure out what to write. Like, and him, Moses knocked it out with 10 commandments. That was his bestseller of all time. Right? 10 things, boom, they stuck through the ages. Right? Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not, you know, covet, thou shalt not, blah, blah, and it made sense. It stuck. 10 things, set in stone. So I'm sure in those days there was a poser in Moses' time. Maybe his name was Harry. Harry hung around. He was jealous of Moses, and he saw all the acclaim Moses was getting before the Ten Commandments. So he got himself a chisel, and he aped Moses. He got a piece of marble, and he got a chisel and a hammer, and he sat there looking at the marble, looking for inspiration in the Tel Aviv cafe of its time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I talked about a dream I had, and we have a dream interpreter on the phone, Trinity from Sacramento. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Trinity.
Hi there.
Trinity, yeah. So yes. What makes you able to interpret dreams?
I'm working on my master's degree right now. I'm just finishing up my master's in consciousness and transformative studies, and I'm specializing in dream work.
What's your bachelor's degree in?
Accounting.
No, don't laugh. I understand. You made a career shift. So you went into this field because what? You're an intuitive type of personality?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you say you come from a family of women who could see around corners, so to speak?
You know, my family didn't talk about it much. So, no, I don't come from a whole family of that. It's just been my own gift.
As a child, were you able to see things others couldn't see?
Yes.
In what way? Give me an example, if you don't mind.
Oh, probably when I was 9 years old, I saw a guardian in my hallway, a man in all black. And, you know, it was quite scary at first until I realized he was there to protect me. He wasn't there to harm me.
But today they would declare that that's schizophrenia probably and put you on drugs.
Fortunately, all those medications weren't available back then.
Thank God, right? The quacks didn't yet declare any vision. Because today the quacks declare any vision a disease. You understand that. The same way they made childbirth into an illness in order to turn women into patients who were just giving birth, they have now declared any vision a disease, a mental disorder, in order to make sure you can be drugged and possibly institutionalized. So how do you really learn how to interpret dreams?
By doing it, by practice, by working with people. I work in groups and I work individually.
Okay, and one last note. I mean, my doctorate is in nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley from 1978, and I've worked in the herbal and nutrition field for many, many years. You should remember this if we never speak again or whatever. Vitamin B6, pyridoxine, produces vivid dreams in color for individuals. I don't know if you know that. It's a very little known fact.
No, I am familiar with that, and I have used that, and some of my...
That's interesting. So that's become... That knowledge has now become part of the mainstream knowledge in people in your field. That's good, because that was originally written by Carl Pfeiffer in the 70s.
Yeah. No, that, and, you know, some of us make teas as well.
Teas?
I don't know if you used mugwort or woodworm.
Well, woodworm is a very hallucinogenic herb, absolutely. That's what we should warn you, that wormwood can also cause hallucinations that are of no benefit whatsoever in high doses. So you think my dream indicates that the female within me was being led to the next dimension, not so much to remove me from life, but to instruct me?
Right. I don't necessarily think that the death was a literal death the way you were perceiving it. I think it's more of a metaphorical death of this level of consciousness. Especially your dream began with, I believe you said, the Yellow Submarine song. You know, the
yes.
kind of to get your attention in this sort of musical, creative way.
Oh, but I never listened to the Beatles. Why would We All Live in a Yellow Submarine pop up in my head?
Well, I think often our dreams are there to surprise us, to grab our attention, to capture us. So something that you're not familiar with is bound to grab your attention more than something you're familiar with.
Actually, I do remember why We All Live in a Yellow Submarine came up. I was thinking of Libya and the politics of the Middle East and all the raging infernos going on around the world and all the different cultures and how cultures are clashing against one another and coming in contact with one another in ways we've never seen before historically in terms of the frequency of interactions between people of different cultures. And I the dream at first was I have to go on the radio and tell people that they have to be accepting of strange cultures because they're here and they're not going away. And the multiculturalists have destroyed America by jamming cultures that are foreign, truthfully, and alien to our way of life down our throats. It's failed in Britain. It's failed in France. It's failing in America because never before in history have those not learned when in Rome do as the Romans do. They now want the Romans to do as they did in their third world countries. Although they have fled their hellholes, they come here and tell us we have to live their way. So I was going to say that, and then the next thing it segues into this dream. Yeah, I know politically you probably don't accept what I just said because you're young. And if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart. And if you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind. That's an old adage that makes sense only after you're 40. Anyway, you're a good sport, and I appreciate your calling the show, Trinity. Trinity, keep in touch. Thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We're living through the most corrupt administration in American history, where one Democrat after another is caught in a scandal. And it is not coincidental that there are riots in the streets of the major cities of America. It is orchestrated to throw your mind away from Obama, away from Rahm Emanuel, away from Nancy Pelosi, away from John Corzine. You think it's happening by itself. You're mistaken. It's all orchestrated in order to divert your attention. Apparently, even Nancy Pelosi came under fire during a C-SPAN weekly briefing, which she never expected. And we'll play that for you in a bit. You're not going to believe this one. But even 60 Minutes, the far left, useless 60 Minutes, is questioning Nancy Pelosi about her stock deals back in 2008. They haven't yet caught up with the $900 million in the solar deal yet to the brother-in-law. But now they're working on something that wonderful Nancy Pelosi did in 2008. And, of course, Americans are starting to see that even the media is waking out of a slumber of some kind. I doubt that they'll get anywhere because they'll only go so far with it. If you want to talk about that or my dream, if you wish to do that, the phone number, you know what it is. Paula in Sacramento, welcome to the program.
Hi. I listened to what you said about your dream from last night, and it touched me so much because I have made some decisions and taken some turns in the last few years where I've questioned myself. But I realize that what you said is correct. I had to do that. I'm where I am because I'm supposed to be here. And that just kind of solidified, you know.
Yes. See, my dream was a message to myself as well as to my listeners. The black lady who I was speaking with was my anima. This requires a great deal of self-analysis over many years. But I'm deeply in touch with my own subconscious, and I'm pretty sure I know what it is. You know that in dreams, all the players are yourself, right?
Right.
Okay, so for me to be the strong figure talking to her and saying you are where you are and that's where you're supposed to be is my way of saying to my inner complainer who says that she took a wrong turn, don't be complaining anymore because you are where you're supposed to be.
Right.
So in other words, I'm trying to unify my own self through my own dream.
Whether that place where we are is good or bad or people agree with it or not, it's where we are supposed to be for whatever reason.
That's exactly the meaning of the message.
Yeah, and I got
it. But what is the meaning of the symbolism of the snow-top mountain that we saw for one instant and it disappeared?
You know, I live in the shadow of Mount Shasta up here in Redding, California, and so I don't know. To me, the mountain symbolizes strength and continuity. And
right, and a snow-capped mountain, in my estimation, symbolizes purity, a distant vision of purity that we glimpse, that all of us have a glimpse of every once in a while, And we try to achieve that purity in our thinking, and rarely can we achieve it for much longer than an instant. But nevertheless, it's always there. The mountain is always there. It's like saying God is always there. It's just that you got to keep looking for it. And God doesn't appear 24/7 to the most religious man on earth. God is only there for the occasional glimpse. Some of us never see him, but he doesn't go away. But if you keep looking for God, he is there. He will appear.
And I'll
so, I mean, I'm just glad. Look, it's very unusual to share a dream on a national talk radio show. I wouldn't have dared it unless I had done it before many times with some of my other dreams that I thought were profound. There was one other element to the dream I have to mention. As I was standing on the railing with this lady, I had dropped my pocket watch. I carry a little pocket watch with me for virtually my entire life. It's a little leather-wrapped Swiss Army pocket watch, the type of that you would have seen in an old-time railroad guy had years ago. I've always carried it in my pocket. And it was on the ground. It had fallen on the grass. And I kept looking at it as I was speaking with her, and I said, I've got to retrieve that watch. Now, of course, what comes to mind is that time is ticking away, and it's time to get your act together. That's one way to look at it. Another way is, I mean, who took a watch? Which painter took a watch and distorted the watch and distorted a picture of time better than anybody in the history of painting? Salvador Dali, right? So that's an interesting concept that appears in my dream as well. Now, why is this dream coming up at this time of social upheaval in the United States of America, at a time when we have the equivalent of a banana republic corruption in the United States of America? This is an important question. It is deeply disturbing to me to see my country unraveling because of the false one in the White House. And that is why it's coming up. Now, I want to compare for you in the seconds that remain the difference between the Tea Parties and the vermin in the Occupy Wall Street movement. I'll start with the Tea Party. God, guns, American oil, strong defense, spending control, no illegal immigration, small government, less taxes, less abortion. That's a beginning. The vermin in the gutters, state is God, no oil, no military, more government spending, violence against Jews and bankers. Shall I go on?
Savage.